Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
And this is Fred Schenkberg. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, Fred. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, no, it's been a little while.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of the things, we were chatting like we always do to get started, and I thought, you know, connectors are underappreciated, troublesome little component, and cables to a larger, you know, associated with that.
Right.
And part of it sparked my, is like, you know, somebody asked me, so how do I get a job at NVIDIA to work at, or a company like that that's working on the bleeding edge, high tech and really cool stuff. And they're like, you know, you can make a whole career just working on capacitors. But they're not fun. They're like,
well,
they don't work, it doesn't matter what kind of whiz bang thing you got at the top end of the system. If they can't be supplied with good power, then it ain't going to work. And then it made me think of connectors, and it's like, they're a marvel that they work to me. I run into so many issues with connectors and so many people, and it's part of an afterthought. It's the mechanical guys say, we've got to put it here so that we can route cables or it has space. And the electrical ones are like, well, it's got to be where I can actually run, you know, a circuit board connect to it or stuff. And if you use through hole, it takes a lot of real estate. So I don't like those. And
and
there's so many options for connectors.
Oh yeah. Locking and keyed.
Zero insertion force.
We've seen certainly the evolution in USB has been pretty dramatic from Apple's Lightning and C, Mini C.
Yeah. And whatever happened to B connectors? I don't think they ever.
That's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's like round connectors with pins and connectors. One of the things I learned early on, I was working with the team and they said, oh, we need, you know, 28 connections on this cable, this connector. And so they went to one of the connectors, the remain unnamed vendors. And they said, yeah, we can make that. And they took a 14-pin one and just doubled it. They just took the CAD and said, all right, stick it on the side here. It never worked. They didn't take into account in the design the thermal expansion. So it was constantly moving back and forth sideways because of its size on the ends. And so the last four pins on either end of the connector were very intermittent. If the system heated up a little bit, the thing expanded. Now we didn't have any contact. And I said, do you make 28 pin connectors like in this style very often? Nope, just for you. We'll make anything you want. And did you evaluate it for this phenomena? And they're like, no, you're the only one that has that problem. It's not our problem. It's what you asked for.
You didn't ask for that. That one requirement was all the pins have to be connected in operation, even when it heats up, you know, at a certain temperature range.
But nobody asked for that. It's just that we have a spot here where we're going to have 28 pins and we need a connector for it. If we do two connectors, it takes more space.
Right.
Just separate them slightly. And we don't want two cables. We want one cable and blah, blah, blah.
And nobody said this is so long linear that the linear expansion is going to separate the distance between the two contact surfaces. And it's going to be very intermittent.
And I suspect that, you know, an engineer at the connector spot probably would have known that, but I'm quite sure that their business model is whatever you want, you know, and their catalog just is, you know, goes on and on and on and on forever. And
yeah, but they don't say whatever you want, whether it works or not,
they say whatever you want and they don't judge it. They don't test it. They don't evaluate it. They say, you want 28 pins in this style? Okay. We'll make 28 pins in this style. You pay for it. But what I mean is that part of it was, the connectors, like a lot of vendors, are just squeezed on how much money they're given for anything. So they don't have the deep research. They don't have the qual systems. They don't, you know, and they've been making this style of connector in that factory forever. And they make lots and lots of 14 pin ones and 8 pin ones and 6 pin ones. And
sure.
And not a problem. And it, they didn't do an FMEA. I'm quite guaranteed of that. They say, well, what happens if we go to 28? And it just was, they're so quick turnaround, get the design, get the molds ready and make it for you. And they're good at that. They're not so good at the technical feasibility of that design. And so we found the issue. It was, oh, well, maybe you want this style connector instead, you know, which is a dollar more.
But who did they suggest that? Or you? Yeah.
No, we said we have a problem with this one.
Okay.
And they said, oh, you should use this other technology, this other style of connector.
Okay.
That accounts for the thermal expansion for large, you know, throws of an array of pins. Oh, why didn't you tell us that earlier? Well, you didn't ask. You went on the site and said, I want a 28 pin.
You know? That's okay. It's kind of pointing fingers at each other.
Well, it was that, but it was also systemic issue is that the electrical site guys said, I need 28 pins. The mechanical guys said, you know, okay. And they weren't really involved with the decision to do that. They had a 28 cable pin or wire cable that were routing around and they could deal with that. And the connector was really an afterthought. It's, you know, it's not quite, it's a mechanical system with electrical properties to
right.
make context.
Right.
And I know in memory connectors, where there's a lot of pins and, you know, if one goes intermittent, then the memory doesn't register correctly and it causes problems with corrupted memory and stuff like that at times in some of its scenarios.
Right.
And we often think about getting gold plated ones and stuff that have enhanced the electrical properties, the connectivity issues, it gets solved with gold plate. But as you can imagine, gold plate's expensive.
Exactly. And they try and put as thin a layer as they can on it and get away with it.
And then it's porosity and then the
and then it's thin gets scraped. Layers.
Yeah. And right. then they get scraped and you get.
And then they get fretting corrosion. And then when you get frozen, you get an open circuit to that. And this was. Yeah. I had this happen on DIMM sticks, you know, that you yep. used to plug into the computer
yep.
all the time. And I could get them active, you know, and it,
you take
eventually,
them out and put them back in and you get a fresh start, but right. the corrosion's all there right. still.
But you've eliminated or you've
wiped it away briefly.
Wiped it away. And so you don't get to see it. Those are kind of very, very difficult ones to troubleshoot. But if you look at the edge connectors of those pins, we found out that there was either residual contamination or, you know, such a thin gold layer that had been scraped off in almost one in two insertions. And yep. caused, you know, and all I had to do was put in 85, relative humidity, 85 C and a,
the corrosion would just go crazy.
Yeah. Well, and in about a day I would have intermittent memory issues. And the problem was there really wasn't any corrective action except the vendor saying, well, we'll do a better job of cleaning or
they'll do that stuff. But then your manufacturing team says, well, is that the right one? Did I put it in? It's only meant to be inserted once and then left alone. And they take it in and out, in and out, in and out. And they're like, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
No, it is real limited.
The real correction is to use a different metallization on it so you don't have the thin layer of gold on the top that allows the tin to come through.
Yeah.
But that's the issue is connectors can fail mechanically. Right.
Right.
Just they don't attach to the board. They don't have a positive, you know,
comes loose in the back,
it doesn't holding attach the pin. Or when you solder it, it doesn't hold itself in place. So it's at a weird angle and it doesn't
right.
fit in the chassis.
Right.
Anymore. It can deteriorate so that it doesn't hold its position. I've seen that happen where
right.
the polymers weren't appropriate for the environment and they just corroded away. The polymers failed. They crumbled away.
Right.
It's like, why are we ever using this? And then the metal part, it's not just a piece of metal and you put two, you know, paper clips kind of next to each other and it works. Is you need intimate contact with a certain force
right.
that they actually stay in contact. And so
right.
oftentimes the metal is formed into a spring or is the force is enhanced by, say, a polymer spring.
Right.
But if you have too high of a force, you can't insert the connector, the cable. You can't mate the connector because it you need a machine to put them together. And
right.
That's expensive. And then some of them you go together and they basically bond to each other and then you can't repair them. The idea of a connector is you can just detach them and do repairs or replacements and stuff of the board or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But then you mentioned fretting. There's right. also just, you know, somebody puts their fat finger on it and now you have like a chlorine and other salts then
right.
corrosion.
Right.
There's just insertion damage. There's insertion where it's not seated correctly and then it vibration pulls it apart. I could go on right. and on and on.
Oh, yeah. Strain relief on the back of the cable in the connector, you know, where the wire interfaces, cold solder joints, it's fairly endless. And it is, you know, on the schematic, just a line that goes from one to another.
Yep.
And, you know, this circuit board is supposed to connect with this circuit board at J1 and A1, whatever.
Right.
And you don't really, nobody details what the interface and connectors are supposed to require. I guess power cables, they certainly have voltage current ratings and things like that that are important. Yeah. But yeah. for digital signals, things like that, you know, you're just trying to get a voltage signal from one to another. You know, sometimes they're shielded, sometimes they're not.
Some of them have ESD protection built right into them.
Right.
You know, and others, and it's all
right. Depending on. Right, whether a connection from the outside, external,
yeah.
or internal. Because, you know, and obviously this is going to be critical for electric cars. And the I think they're having a standard. You don't own an EV, do you?
No. I've heard, you know, a lot of companies a couple of years ago said, well, we'll just use Tesla because there's more
right.
chargers out there. And then right. Tesla, was it last year, said, oh, we're not going to do chargers anymore. It was like, what?
Well, they had to come up with a standard, just like we had a standard gas spout for yeah. for diesel and versus gasoline that
yeah.
they
yeah.
couldn't put one in. I'm guessing, you know, obviously to come up with a standard. I haven't had an EV and I don't.
But I get the impression is that that'll come out in about 10 years and there'll be a de facto standard anyway, and then they'll write it down.
Well, there must be now because there's hundreds of charging stations all over.
I know, there's hundreds of adapters that you get with your car. You have a whole box full of stuff that says if you're at a Tesla one, put this on the as an interface.
Another and potential layer of unreliability.
Oh yeah, definitely, and it adds resistance to it, so you're wasting power and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But I find, and then you get the high speed stuff. Those connectors really need to be designed well in order not
absolutely
to signaling.
Right. And yeah. Interconnects in high-speed computers have a significant effect on the signal quality.
Yep. And so why I wanted to talk about it is one is just awareness of all the range of issues that come with connectors. Yeah, they're on every circuit board practically. They're almost everywhere. We use them a lot. Yet mm-hmm. within your organization, if you're a reliability person, you know, who is the overall connector person? You know, who knows the different technologies and where they apply and when do I need a latching mechanism versus, you know, zero insertion force? And what's the difference between high frequency versus, you know, just a 5-volt line and a static line? And
right.
what somebody needs to actually understand that, because the opening story was, you know, we needed a connector and we needed more pins on it. But there wasn't anybody in our team in procurement didn't have the expertise on it to say, wait a second, you know, if we thought through thermal expansion on this and or whatever the if we're mm-hmm. asking for something, are we doing the right thing? And it's not, it could be a career for somebody in reliability engineering to just be focused on connectors because there's enough problems with them that you could stay fully employed.
Yeah, you'd hope that the cable companies and some of these, you know, manufacturers of mass cabling systems, you know, are very good at, you know, having some understanding of this. Now, obviously, with this connector you had a problem with, I don't know where you found the problem or when you found the problem, but obviously,
the first time we powered it on.
halt testing would have shown no, that very quickly.
It was just the first prototype. This is yeah, going on.
Yeah.
And about a half hour later.
But it worked. It worked at first when you plugged it in, and it was heated up.
And then it stopped working. Yeah.
It so it didn't take. Hopefully you didn't make a whole bunch of those, but now that became a lesson learned for the connector company and your company.
Yeah.
You know, that you have a linear expansion that gets on such a long connector gets to be significant.
And you have the pins are very small. It was a digital line, so you don't need a huge contact area or anything of that stuff.
Right.
The issue is that it's not quite mechanical. It's not quite electrical only. Either one of those teams really own it. They both need it to show up and be where it needs to be. And there's all these other factors that go into selecting connectors. Now, better organizations that I worked for, they have, a guideline. They had like a list. It's what is the voltage and current it's got to go? Is this one that we already use? And it was like supply chain issues. If we already use 4-pin connectors and you only need 3, get the 4-pin because it's cheaper.
Right.
Then stocking another one.
Right. You know? Volume and part numbers and all
the other all things. Kinds of stuff like that. And then it kind of went down this laundry list of things to consider. And if it's custom, how's it qualified? Is it work in our environment? And it triggered then, reliability or quality people to step in and work with it, or somebody to deal with. Does it really work for us?
All right.
But they are complicated enough that, and I have found more and more over the years that not just connector companies, but all vendors they don't get the margins they used to get. They have stripped away a lot of their R&D teams. They've stripped away a lot of their customer service teams and verification validations is, well, it met the standard, kind of thing. And they move on. And then you see it where, well, where's the test results for this? And they send it to you and it's for the 14-pin connector. It says, this is a 28-pin connector. Same family. We do the qualification on the 6-pin ones and it should work for everything. I'm like, okay, I see where the problem is. They don't make enough money to test every variation and verify every issue.
Well, how much responsibility? I mean, you're talking about connecting something in your system, or if it's outside. I mean, if it's standard power plugs, okay, you've got the uniform 115 VAC plugs.
Yeah, there's different UL criteria. Right, and there's criteria.
Right, and there's no need to that's kind of a commodity that's pretty high volume and all that.
Well, it's kind of a commodity until you start looking at the strain relief on them.
Yeah.
Then they get very different. And then quality of the manufacturing does really make a difference for the longevity of them. They're all safe. They all pass the mega and all that other stuff.
Right.
But they, for your application that has a lot of motion, you need to pay attention to the strain relief, which we
exactly
paid attention to.
Exactly. And how you connect the wire, the flexible part, to the actual stiff connector pin or whatever, and where you're going to get the strain relief. But then again, a lot depends on how it's working in your system. And it's like noise internally and things like that, whether you've shielded it properly. The connector company or the wire manufacturer and connector manufacturer can't be aware of that unless you give them the system.
Yeah.
And so,
and even then, what my argument is it's rare. It's more and more rare that the vendor will have the resources to help you answer that question. We've cost reductions and you can make them. And we'll try to pick the right one. But I think in some components, especially commodity-ish type components, is that we don't have the most experienced engineers working on those, even though they cause, say, 10% of your field problems. And I think that's where looking at components in, the brand new gee whiz, 2-nanometer, this, that, and the other thing, yeah, we need to pay attention to that. Will that actually work for us? And let's get it up before we get it in any products. Let's do our due diligence there. Yet don't lose sight of the connectors and capacitors and resistors and linear regulators and all these other parts that we use almost without a thought, they still cause field problems. And I think that's why I wanted to talk to you about connectors is it's, we use a lot of them. They cause a lot of problems. We should refresh that. We should be aware of them and pay attention to them.
There's probably not a connector guy in most companies, you know, but, but you talk about not anybody having expertise in mechanical, it's a mechanical, it's an electrical system, but that's kind of all true with almost all electronic assemblies. It's a mechanical issue, like the underfill in a BGA to, you know, the expansion and contraction of that has caused all kinds of electrical problems, even though it's a mechanical issue of, different thermal coefficients of expansion, matching those and things. Yeah.
We can wrap this all up, though, Kirk, by saying, well, software can fix it later.
Which we haven't even talked about yet. Yeah. Don't think so. Not most of the time. Not with connectors. But you just get, you grab another one, you plug it in, it works. You know, you throw away the cable.
Yeah, and you totally forget why it failed or how it failed.
Or you don't do any inspection on it. You say, well, that was just a bad one. But there is a big difference between US, just general USB cables. I saw on a recent television show about looking in the inside, doing an X-ray of the Apple USB versus somebody else's USB-A. And they had, you know, amplifiers or they had components in the connector, whereas, you know, a cheap manufacturer just has a straight wire connection to pretty much everything. And
it might be just a force fit, you know, instead of soldered or anything else. It could be just the wires close to the plate and it's kind of molded in place and then they hope it holds.
But people couldn't see the difference, and it would be hard to justify, you know, whereas Apple cable was USB cable was $50 and you could find, you know, the run of the mill USB cables for $15. It's, you know, real hard to, unless you know that information about the quality or internal components or how it's built. I just grab whatever, and I've certainly gone through a lot of USB cables that have failed, probably mostly because of strain relief.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. It's, you know, sometimes you get what you pay for, but it does take taking the time to understand it. What's the right cable and what's the right system for our application? It's not grab one off the shelf. You know, if you've got a lot of long history with a product and you've been using this ribbon cable to connect your motherboard to the display and you've got, you know, evidence from your field results that that's okay, it'll eventually catch up to you because eventually we're going to design it into a laptop. Now that cable has to move and or we, you know, stretch the distance so the strain relief doesn't, we do something that removes all the margin and now it fails. It's something that, it's true with all of our components, yet it's one that often gets overlooked and for all kinds of reasons and all kinds of steps in the program. So those are, that's why I wanted to talk to you about it. Right, I know you've dealt with connectors various times.
Lots of times, yes. And it can be very frustrating.
It can be. And let's, you know, if you're the folks that are listening to this, it's, you know, do you have somebody that's the go-to internal connector person, or is it, you know, not an issue and, you know, or is it creeped up as a problem every now and then and you realize that, yeah, it is a connector problem. It's kind of an informal survey. And one part is to say, hey, what do you see or do? How do you prevent cable issues would be the success story I'd really like to hear. Or if you've got questions about connectors, I've certainly, Kirk and I both have had plenty of experience dealing with them, trying to troubleshoot them and stuff.
Right.
So, you know, let us know. How's connectors working for you and your electronics? And we'd be very interested to see how that's all working. But let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a couple of ways to connect with us. Kirk and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So plenty of ways to get connected to us.
Wait, wrap it up.
Well, thanks, Kirk. We'll see you later.
All right, Fred. Talk to you soon.
Yep, see you.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.